You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about bluebays, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on PBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the internet's only podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder. Over there is Jeff Bear.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jeff Bear. That's Eric D. Snyder. And we have a show for you.
Hoo boy, do we.
And as you guys know, listening at home or in the car or maybe on the bus, where else could they listen?
We don't know
maybe
where you work. We don't know. We don't care where you listen.
I would care a little bit. Like, what happens if you find out to?
But our official show policy is we don't care. Like you, Jeff, individually might care, but as a show, we're unconcerned with where you listen to us.
Most importantly, we have an iTunes review. Somebody thought to tell us what they think of our show on iTunes, and then Eric here reads it in old-time radio voice. Take it away, Eric.
This is from someone named Fun Muffins, and the subject of the review is belittling people isn't funny. Fun Muffin says, these idiots laugh at how people look. Trump does that. It's mean. The story of DOS was perfect. Now, I'll pause there. You're thinking, wait, DOS? The story of DOS? Who's that? Oh, it's that grinning hillbilly that Andrew Garfield played in Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh.
His name was last name was DOS.
Okay.
So.
The movie I didn't see.
Right. The story of DOS was perfect. You two are so mean, you laugh at stuff that really happened to him. DOS is so much of a better person than you two will ever be. You seriously need to think about your review because it makes you both look like losers. Well, thank you, Fun Muffins.
Thanks, Fun Muffins.
A couple of points. Calling people losers, Trump does that, and it's mean. I think you, Jeff, probably need to think the most about your review since you didn't see the
movie. Right. That's right. I didn't even see the movie, so I don't know how closely they listened to what we were saying.
You're going to need to you're due for a lot more self-reflection than I am.
I guess I am.
For
my
saying
bad.
Such mean things about DOS.
My bad, Mr. Fun Muffins. Or Miss Fun Muffins? We don't know.
I don't know. There's not indicated.
Yeah.
You know, almost 20 years ago, I was getting angry letters from teenage girls who were mad that I'd made fun of the movie Titanic, and more than one of those girls was mad on the grounds that I had made fun of things that really happened to real people. Like that it was offensive to the actual victims of the Titanic.
But you don't understand. They died because of those funny things.
Yeah, anyway. We have a nice review, too.
Oh, good, good.
This is by Lavago. He says, I get a kick out of listening to Bear and Snyder talk about movies. They have just the right balance of putting on a professional podcast, but not sounding hoity-toity with their knowledge of movies. I really like it when Jeff makes a deadpan joke, and Eric treats it as a serious statement that must be responded to. Small example from the Arrival review. Jeff, our top 10 will be really boring. Eric, well, no it won't, but we will have identical lists. I'm not sure if Eric is doing this on purpose or not, but he does it every episode, and I get a kick out of it. I think Lavago is figuring out how banter works. Thank you. Thanks, Lavago.
Yeah,
and thank you,
Lavago.
Fun Muffins, for taking the time. We have Lavago said we have the right balance of putting on a professional podcast but not sounding hoity-toity, which is the polite way of saying that it sounds professional but not too professional.
Not too much.
Not too smart.
We have no bells nor whistles.
Nope, none. Now let's review movies because we have a few to get to. I have to make up for last week where there was no show.
No show. This week we got a show.
This week we have a show. We have movies to talk about. First, Fantastic Beasts and or Where to Find Them.
No.
and where to find them.
That's right. Because guess what? I mean, if you see the movie, you pretty much know where the beasts are.
Yeah, and the answer is pretty much just everywhere, just around.
Well, they're in a suitcase.
Well, in a suitcase, except when they get out, and then they're everywhere.
Yeah, here's the thing. This is what I was realizing. So this is Newt. What? How do you say his last name?
Gingrich.
No, wrong Newt.
No, Newt Scamander.
And that's Eddie Redmayne.
Sure.
And he's a guy who comes over to New York City.
It's 1926, by the way.
It's 1926, and you can't quite figure out what he's doing there. And he doesn't bother to announce exactly why he's there for quite a while.
And he's also a kind of a fey weirdo who won't make eye contact, and he whispers everything he says. And at first you're like, is this part of the character, or is this just Eddie Redmayne being
Eddie Redmayne? Right.
Just what he's doing.
It is this.
Like, is he a fantastic beast himself?
That's right. This character is a 10-year-old who is desperately excited about his lizards. That's what this get. And it's
except,
just like,
except that he's like 35.
Right. And the worst part is when a 35-year-old loses something, they tend to take ownership over it, responsibility, and they tend to worry, and they tend to explain to everybody else what it might mean and how they could help out if they're willing to help.
If the thing that they've lost, especially if it might hurt people.
That's right. But a 10-year-old is just like, huh, I wonder where my lizards went. Oh, well, maybe I'll look for them. Maybe I won't. Maybe I will again. And they're just scattered brained, and they're inward thinking, and they're uncomfortable to be around. And at one point, Eddie Redmayne's character,
Newt Scamander,
explains that he annoys people. And I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how he gets that. I don't know if the character is – I don't know if he's supposed to be autistic. Seriously, because the way that he acts is on the spectrum somewhere. And in his defense, most of the things that were loose were not harmful. And he could magic it so that people wouldn't see them or whatever.
Right.
It's 1926. He has come to America to harass wild beasts, fantastic beasts.
He preserves them.
He wants to take care of them. In the magic world, they don't like the fantastic beasts. He wants to preserve them. And while he's here in New York, he runs into a muggle or non-magic guy named Jacob Kowalski. That's Dan Fogler.
A non-mage.
Non-mage, so they call him.
Non-mage,
cool. They call him in America.
Cool word, everybody. That's really
well,
cool.
Well, muggle hadn't caught on yet in America. They
that's
call
right,
them non,
that's right.
non-mages. And mm-hmm. Dan Fogler is one of those chubby, funny guys.
Yeah, he's a Josh Gad type.
Yeah, a Josh Gad type.
Whoever's the most popular is just the – like, so after this movie, maybe it'll be like Josh Gad is a Dan Fogler type.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Yeah,
Dan Fogler might swing back.
He might come back. He's mostly been annoying in movies before, and in this movie he was not the most annoying thing.
He's not the most annoying thing. He's got a little bit of charm going for him. A little bit.
And like most people in movies that involve supernatural things, after one scene of having his mind blown, his world changed by the magic, after that, he's pretty much okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
He learns to roll with it very, very quickly. You know, we humans are very adaptable.
That's true. And then who else is there?
What's the plot here? I saw this movie, but what's the plot exactly?
Okay, so three-fourths of the way into the movie, the plot becomes obvious.
All right.
Otherwise,
refresh my memory.
It is there is some sort of powerful
entity. Oh, that's
entity.
Right. There's a thing going around that's causing trouble. Yes. Oh, okay. I remember now.
And the best scenario that they think that is going on here is somebody is repressing their magic. And it's probably a kid. And there we go.
It's a thing
so
that
eventually we search.
It's
that.
A thing that we didn't. I don't think we knew about this before in the wizarding world of Harry Potter. Obscurials, which sort of a way of the people would harness their dark magic impulses into a thing where it wouldn't cause any trouble unless it did. But also, the American Ministry of Magic thinks all the trouble's being caused. Don't they think it's being caused by someone or something else? They think maybe it's one of these fantastic beasts and
right.
where to find them.
Yep. And so then they immediately suspect him.
Right. And so Newt has to clear the good name of the fantastic beasts and where to find them.
It took quite a long time to realize Newt was an expert, but it also took a long time to see, like, figure out how he fit into the entire wizarding world. Like, was he accepted? Was this something of interest?
He seems to be kind of a nutter.
He's a nutter, but some people respect him. It's that weird thing because I guess he's got some good
fringe
genes. But anyway, there's also Sam Watterson's daughter is in
this
movie.
She has a name, Jeff.
Yeah, Sam Watterson's daughter. That's her name, isn't it?
Catherine Waterston.
Patriarchy. Did you have a problem just for me anyway, especially with Eddie Redmayne's sheepish little talking voice?
I have a problem with everything Eddie Redmayne does all the time.
All of these names that are being said, it's like, I don't understand what you're saying.
His little whispering coy, I'm coy, I'm whispering. It's the same thing he was doing when he was the Danish girl.
It is.
It's the same coy, I'm whispering.
A little bit of odd blinking, can't look at you in the eyes.
Yep. Yeah. He runs into, this is an American magic girl, Catherine Waterston, Porpentina Goldstein. She works at the American Ministry of Magic, and her sister can read minds, and the sister has a crush on Dan Fogler. And that's cute.
She's a classic, like, 1920s
kind of ditzy dame.
Hey there, sailor kind of girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it that has a little bit of charm to it. I like seeing wands in movies just like I like seeing lightsabers in movies. There's some cool stuff there.
Some good wand action.
Some good wand action.
Like you can see the whole wand a couple of times.
And the beasts are cool. They are.
They're fantastic.
All of these creatures are really cool. Uh-huh. It's just like, my God, how much time can we waste getting to a plot?
I couldn't tell you any of the creatures' names, partly because of Eddie Redmayne's whispery English accent. It's the Gringlefibbin. It's the Flubbleglebbin.
Yep.
It's the three-legged Sevifglebbin. But also, yes, they take forever. And the stuff with the animals, it's cute and it's fun, but then there's so much of it. There's a huge sequence in Central Park where I realized, this is not furthering the plot. This is just to have adventures with the Fantastic Beasts and where to find them.
This is the problem. The creatures that sneak out of his briefcase don't actually have, like, I kept waiting. It's like, okay, this one can do this. So I wonder how that'll come into play later.
Oh,
this
yeah.
one can do this. And it's like, no, there's one that is known for being good at picking locks.
Right.
And that one works.
But the rest are all – yeah, they're – you know what they are? They're not. They're the opposite of plot points. They're plot distractions. Everything they do just slows down the story and prevents things from happening so we can scurry around and catch it, and then the story can move on.
All right, so I don't know this. Do you know this? This is based on
a true story.
A book that's kind of like an encyclopedia?
Like a textbook sort of. It was the guidebook, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
So, this is what it felt like. We were just doing like, oh, here's a random page. Here's a beast.
That's about right.
It does this. We're going to move on. Here's a random page.
J.K. Rowling wrote it. Wrote the screenplay.
Oh.
Yeah, wrote it all herself. And David Yates, who directed, I don't know, 10 or 11 of the 15 Harry Potter movies. He directed this. And here's the other problem, aside from taking too much time to get going. The Harry Potter movies were about children, and even though they were children who had grown up in the magic world, they themselves were still discovering their powers and finding magic in the magic.
Mm-hmm.
With this, it's all adults, and there's no sense of discovery. There's the one guy who's discovering magic, Dan Fogler, but he gets used to it pretty fast. So no one is discovering the world, and I realize that seems to be a big gap, that not having that sense of discovery and wonderment kind of takes a lot of the fun out of the whole world for me, turns out.
It does, and the one of the weirdest things was the end of the film, one of the stars of the film, it's revealed is going to be somebody else in later
mm-hmm.
films.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I did not care at all because we have no relationship to that character yet.
Right.
There was a little bit of talk of that character, but I mean, mm-hmm. it's much less than anything world building that Voldemort had in the Harry Potter movies or anything like that.
Yeah, so this guy's a nobody.
It felt a bit like a joke of just like, well, this is – This is a nod toward celebrities. This isn't a nod toward story.
We're supposed to be delighted
movies.
or impressed because it's that person. Did you see when they announced that actor is going to play that character in the sequel? Did you see the internet's reaction?
No.
It was, there's a big collective, ugh.
Ezra Miller's in it, and he's standing creepy for a lot of the movie.
He's got a Mo Howard haircut of the Three Stooges. This part was interesting to me. He's the adopted child of this woman who's a crusader against witchcraft. She thinks there's witches among us, and she wants to bring them down. And so she's this very pious, righteous woman. And then, Ezra Miller is one of her adopted kids. We may at some point need to talk about how Ezra Miller at some point turned into an unsettlingly dark and attractive grown up. I was unsettled how attractive he was.
All right, yeah, we can do that one day.
They bothered me. I don't like it.
But otherwise, like things like John Voight showing up and just reminded me that he trumpeted for Trump, and now he's kind of doing some sort of weird similar role in this movie was off-putting.
This is the biggest movie John Voight has been in a while. This is this might be the first thing he's been in that was released in movie theaters in a few years. Anyway, I'm looking. Yeah, he's been in mostly. Anyway, good for him. Yeah, I suspect they're setting characters up for more movies.
Yeah, and the way that we're talking about this movie, you notice we're just jumping all over the place because it doesn't have a real good rhyme or rhythm to it. It's just plopped in there with it believes the most interesting thing is the world as opposed to a tight story. And for me, I got a little bit bored with the world, and I think you hit it perfectly with the idea of like nobody's discovering anything except for Dan Fogler's character.
Right, and we've already seen like almost close to two dozen movies in this world. Like we get it, we know about the wands and the magic. Like we know. What about it? I give it a C+.
I'm waffling, but I'm stuck on a 5 out of 10 now.
All right. That's what's it called? Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Mm-hmm.
And then next up, hey Jeff, what's America's favorite sport? What sport do we want to see more movies about than any other sport?
There's only one answer for that. Boxing.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Apparently.
We need more boxing movies.
Bleed for this. You didn't see the other one that I had to see. Hands of Stone.
I didn't.
Which was about Roberto Duran. And Roberto Duran is also in this. I'm learning so much about the boxing world, so much that I never knew or cared about, and still don't.
Still don't.
No. Did you know this guy?
I did not know this guy. I'm kind of surprised.
Vinny Pazienza. And he was apparently a tiny little boxer. Not welterweight. What's the smallest one? Light welterweight. Light welterweight. Mm. Yeah, he 140 pounds. And he apparently was doing all right for himself there in the late 80s, early 90s. And he's Miles Teller in this movie. For me, not knowing anything about him, just watching the movie, the way he's played here, Paz, the Pazmanian Devil.
I love that nickname.
Yeah, it's a good nickname. He's just sort of this mouthy Italian-American family. They sound like they're from Jersey. They're from Providence, Rhode Island. But they're that kind of, you know, mom sits in a room full of Jesus statues.
Yeah,
and dad is sort of supporter and trainer kind of, and he's doing all right for himself, sort of a good natured kind of reckless kid, being a boxer, and has a couple of matches. Oh, he gets hooked up with Aaron Eckhart, his alcoholic trainer.
Yeah, both of them are kind of on their way out. That's at least what management is looking at. It's like, hey, your best days are behind you.
Yeah,
let's call it a career. And, you know, Vinny does not like that idea.
No. And so the new guy, Aaron Eckhart, has him move up a couple weight classes. Oh, because he was almost killing himself to get to 140.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that. And then he wins a championship. And so now, things are looking good now.
This is like halfway through the movie. Look, then.
It's 45 minutes. I made a note of it.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, 45 minutes. And up to now, you're watching the story be like, all right, what about it? Well, what's going on? This seems like a pretty average boxing story to me so far.
This is totally how I was feeling.
And I don't know. I've never heard of Vinny Pazienza, so I don't know what's maybe.
Yeah, I had no idea what was to come.
Then finally, thank goodness, he's in a terrible car accident.
Yes.
So then that's the movie is then about that, where he screws
in his head.
His neck jacked up, not paralyzed, but he may not walk again, but he wants to fight.
But he wants to be trained, mm-hmm. but like, is that the good motivation to get him, back on his feet again or not? And blah, 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 blah. And different family has different views. The trainer also has different views. And it's fine. It's good, I guess. It's all right.
This whole thing, the story, it ought to be inherently inspiring. This ought to be a very inspiring story. And when it was all said and done, it made it seem like it wasn't that hard.
Like I know.
Like the yes. whole, it's this whole comeback and coming back from almost dying and everything. The movie just fails to show the struggles that it would be. And Miles Teller is fine, but it's not really a very deep performance or anything.
Mm-mm. No, he's definitely done better.
Yeah, do you not get a sense at all that this was like actually a really grueling, hard thing to do, which kind of defeats the purpose.
I know. It felt mild. It's a very quiet film. Sometimes they do it on purpose in the sense of like they'll start a song nice and quiet and then they'll crank it up for an intense moment. But otherwise, it did. It felt like, yeah, okay, this is what this guy wants to do. He wants to keep trying.
I like some of the rapport with Miles Teller and Aaron Eckhart.
Totally.
I like his parents. It's Katie Sagal as the mom and Karen Hines, who is Irish, is his dad.
Doing a good job.
And good job on that accent there.
Yeah.
I didn't find it unbearable, but I did not like it. I don't think it's a good movie because it takes what ought to be a very inspiring story and just poops it out.
It makes it a little bit mild. Yeah.
Makes it a lot mild and boring to me. I give it a C.
Okay. I'm a 6 out of 10. I'm still a sucker for a sports movie.
Yeah.
Still a sucker for a boxing movie. And there are some decent scenes there, but you really don't spend a lot of time in the ring in this movie.
No, you don't.
In comparison to other boxing films.
I wonder if you had seen Hands of Stone about Roberto Duran, because it was just like 3 months ago. I wonder if that kind of weighed on my psyche of like, oh, yeah. here's another one of these.
To me, this is like, all right, kind of like Southpaw in the sense of it's fine. Mm-hmm. But Jake Gyllenhaal tried a little bit harder in Southpaw yes. than what we saw out of Miles here. But otherwise, yeah, it's fine.
And then we come to The Eagle Huntress.
Oh, The Eagle Huntress.
It's a documentary. We haven't reviewed a documentary in a while, it seems like.
No.
I mostly don't like real life.
I know. You avoid it like the plague.
Mm-hmm. But The Eagle Huntress is delightful. This premiered at Sundance, and people there were talking about how delightful it was. And I kept thinking, the whole year I've been thinking, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's very – I'm sure it is. But there's just so many movies to watch. You have to prioritize. You know, you got to do triage.
I hear you.
Then finally I had occasion to watch it, and I'm glad I did, which I knew I would be.
Yeah.
It's Mongolia is where we are.
That's right. And it's like, what, 12 generations?
12 generations.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Of eagle hunters.
Now, when you hear eagle hunter, maybe you think they're hunting eagles. Because like a deer hunter hunts deer. No, it's more like bow hunter. They hunt with eagles. They use That's eagles right. just like a bow hunter uses a bow to hunt whatever he hunts. They use eagles to help
probably
them hunt.
A little bit more difficult. You don't have to feed the bow.
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, yeah. I mean, grammatically, it's like that.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah, they train eagles to help them hunt foxes and rabbits. And this has been going on 12 generations. The family has done it. It's very, a proud tradition. I looked it up. This is Western Mongolia. They got Russia right above them, China right below them, and Kazakhstan to the left. Because this edge of Mongolia is like this sort of triangle sort of wedge in there between those two countries. And what the language they're speaking is Kazakh. And so I guess it's a Kazakh ethnic thing. I was reading up on it on Wikipedia.
Nice. Well, and it's also a really cool thing here is there's a competition as well.
Yes.
And that is a great driving force to be able to showcase this 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, like most forms of hunting, it's used for real reasons and also – competitive sport. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the whole thing here. It's a girl. This girl, Aishalpan is her name.
Aishalpan.
13 years old, and her dad is an eagle hunter, and his father was an eagle hunter, et cetera, et cetera. She wants to be one, and you're thinking, oh, well, they're not going to let her. Guess what? Her parents don't care. Her mom and dad are like, sure.
Her dad is great. So cool. Her dad is so cool.
It's so like, great. It's so great how much they love each other. Like they got her saying early on, she's like, I love my dad. He's like a teacher to me. Like she just mm-hmm. she idolizes her dad. Loves going out hunting with him. And her mom. She's also got a younger brother and sister. Mom is cool with Aishulpan being dad's.
Yeah, she says something at one point where it's like, I wish we had that relationship, but it's so great that they have it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you believe her, and it's sweet.
Yeah,
and it's just
great, supportive, really loving parents and the whole family. And the younger brother and sister, you can see how proud they are of her. And so, yeah, she wants to be an eagle hunter. And her parents are like, yeah, fine.
Put in the work, put in the time, put in the effort. And if you're good at it, great.
There's a montage of the village elders, very stern-faced, telling their reasons of why she can't be an eagle hunter, it's the standard sexist excuses that you hear about everything. And it's so funny to hear them say it in Kazakh, mm-hmm. to see it subtitled. All their very stern-faced, but nobody's stopping her either. Like there's no religious rule against her or anything.
Right, they're judging, but they're not stopping.
Right, yeah, and so the movie takes us through. At first, she has to get an eaglet.
That is just nuts.
That sequence is amazing.
That
where
whole
they go
thing
get
is amazing.
An eaglet to train, and then the competition, and then actual hunting out for real. The
That's
movie
right.
takes to the whole thing, and it's just such a happy and grin inducing movie to see this family, especially the father daughter relationship, is just so lovely and so warm. You love it. And then also the girl power aspect of it, that she wants to do this and she does it and that's cool. And she does a great job at it and good for her.
Yeah.
Just you can do anything, whatever you want to do, you can do it. Really upbeat movie.
And it's the right time. And what's so weird is I kept thinking, wow, this would be so different if Clinton had won.
Yeah.
Like this documentary would feel so different.
It would feel more celebratory.
Yes,
as opposed to
necessary,
aspirational, like, yeah,
a reminder mm-hmm. of what is possible, and it is absolutely charming. You can easily take the whole family.
It is, yeah. It's rated G. And there's some, if they can read. I mean, there's the subtitles of the family talking. Also, there's English narration by Daisy Ridley.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Star
Wars,
and it also looks beautiful. The way it's filmed, widescreen out there in the Mongolia and the mountains there, just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, absolutely, The Eagle Huntress. I give it a B+.
I give it an 8 out of 10.
You know what that means? It's BS approved.
Woohoo!
Nice going, The Eagle Huntress. And then finally this week, it sounds like a thrilling movie, The Edge of 17.
How close to the edge? Please tell me. I didn't see this movie. Only you did. How
right.
close to the edge did they get?
They get very, very close to the edge of 17. In fact, now that I think of it, the main character is 17 years old. So she's not really on the edge of it. She's like, she's in it. She
Wait,
fell in.
She
might be on the outer edge.
Yeah.
I guess she could be at the other edge, the far
right.
edge. I don't know.
That's probably the edge she's at.
They don't really get into it. The Edge of 17... which written directed by a woman named Kelly Freeman Craig,
who wrote a terrible movie called Postgrad.
Yeah, wrote that. It was terrible. This is not terrible.
That's good.
This is much better. Haley Steinfeld stars as Nadine. She's the one who's at the edge of 17, and she is. The movie's set in Oregon. Oregon license plates on the cars, but filmed up in Canada,
Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She's a high school student and she's got one friend, and Nadine is neurotic and insecure. She has a low self-image. She kind of talks too much sort of impulsively, the kind of teenager who looks down on her generation for always being on their phones and using their emojis mm-hmm. and stuff. She's kind of obsessive, just sort of a difficult person. From the audience perspective, she is likable. Like for the most part. And we find her funny, and the parts of her that are not likable are the parts that the movie wants us to find unlikable. Like
okay.
I think she comes across the way that she is intended to, which is sometimes meant to test the limits of like how much we can sympathize with her. But that's kind of what the movie is about: is that she kind of looks on herself and sees herself acting in a way she doesn't like, but she doesn't know how to change it, and just sort of trapped in herself, not comfortable in her own skin. And then her best friend, her only friend, Krista, hooks up with her brother, her older brother, Darian, he's played by one of the guys who was in Everybody Wants Some.
Blake Jenner?
Yeah, that's the one. So then that screws up Nadine's world. And so it's about her coming to terms with that. Also, her father died a few years ago. There's some unprocessed grief there. Her mother, played by Kira Sedgwick, she's kind of a mess too and depends on the son for a lot of help being an adult. So there's this family that was hurt by the father's death, mostly the girl, mostly Nadine, but also her brother and mother and how they're coping with it or not coping with it. Woody Harrelson is her teacher, who's the kind of teacher who the first scene of the movie is her going in there to tell him that she's going to commit suicide and that he should probably do something about it. And he says to the effect of, as it happens, I was just writing my own suicide letter. Let me read it to you. And I'm paraphrasing the movie here, but I only get 35 minutes of lunchtime, and every day it's destroyed by this student who's badly dressed or whatever. So they've got – one of those fun kind of snarky teachers.
Okay.
They got that kind of relationship where he, you know, ultimately is there for her and helps her, but he knows how she is. It's mostly a really funny, snarky kind of movie. It's got a couple of really heartbreaking scenes as she's kind of trying to throw herself at guys a little bit or a little jealous of her best friend hooking up with somebody, the little brother. Some of that really relatable teen angst stuff.
I just noticed it's rated R.
It is, yes. It's not super graphic, but yeah, they cuss a lot.
Okay.
Like I said, it mostly is Nadine's story, but we do get Darian, the brother, and the mom, too, and even their relationship with each other. And so it helps it overcome. It's basically, it's a formula. It's kind of a formulaic situation. The quirky, oddball teenager and the cool teacher and the, you know, nothing new here, but does a good job of making it fresh. And Haley Steinfeld is really good.
That's good.
She's a really good actress and really coming into her own. And she's got some really good emotional stuff and some really good funny stuff. And it is overall a fine film, The Edge of 17. And I give it a B+.
Oh.
That's right. Too bad you didn't see it. It might have been BS approved.
Maybe it will be one day.
Maybe it will be one day.
One day. It can hope.
Because you know what? We can do that.
Yeah.
Like if, for example... If I were to have watched a movie like The Meddler,
yeah,
and I gave it a B+, but you didn't see it. And we said, well, you know, if you ever see this movie, maybe it'll be BS approved. And then you watched it.
And guess what?
What?
BS approved.
Oh, I'm so happy. You watched it with your mom, didn't you?
I watched it with my mom.
Oh, this, by the way, everyone, this is that segment called, Hey, What'd You Watch?
Hey, What'd You Watch?
Yeah.
I watched it with my mom. Couldn't have been better as far as watching it with her. There was many moments where I was like,
nudging her in the ribs, like, hey, mom.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, what? What do you mean? Like, things like that. It was really great. But yeah, I thought Susan Sarandon, I didn't think at first I was going to get past that accent.
It's unfamiliar, the Bronx or Brooklyn thing or whatever she's doing, yeah.
Yeah, it's unfamiliar for her to put on an accent.
Right, yeah, just for her.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, this is going to be too much, but it's not. It becomes her quite well, and it's a really great performance, and it's a really rich movie, even though it so pleasantly deals with all of the odd surface things. And yeah, I really enjoyed the film.
Excellent. I'm so glad. What do you give it officially?
I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
All right. Yeah. There you go. Retroactively, BS approved.
That's right. I also saw The Hollers.
Oh, The Hollers.
John Krasinski's directorial film.
This has no chance of being BS approved because I didn't like it.
You didn't like it, and I thought it was watchable, but man, it's got Zach Braff all over it in a bad way. It's the white son savior coming home to like figure out all his problems and
well,
figure
it was a Zach
out everybody
Braff, but it was so many. I mean, Garden State was like the pinnacle of them, but it was it was a culmination of dozens of those generic Sundance movies. Yeah,
most definitely. It just kept being like, oh wow, you got this person to be in your movie too. Oh, and this person. Wow. And it's kind of okay. All right, I'll keep watching. That was that. It's a 5 out of 10.
5. All right.
Yeah.
What else did you watch?
I also watched Eye in the Sky.
I didn't see that, so I don't care what you thought. I heard it was good, though.
I won't give it a grade, a score. It was good, very procedural, and they really try to hook you in on the idea of, hey, you know, these drones are doing things, but there's a lot of decisions, at least when the English make these choices.
Is Helen Mirren in it?
Helen Mirren, Alan Rickman is in it, so you get to watch him talk a lot, which is great. And then Aaron Paul is in it as well. And there's a lot to it. And sometimes it feels a little basic, but other times it feels like they're doing a good job of showing the intricacies of exactly what it entails.
Cool.
And yeah, it was good. I also saw The Little Prince.
The new version of that is on Netflix.
That's right. It's worth checking out, people. It's beautiful to look at.
Did you ever read that book as a child or anything?
No, but I'm thinking that will be something that I do with Dylan.
I read it as an early teen. It's not like a super young book.
No, but it's something I could read out loud to him in a few years kind of thing. Yeah. And then Zootopia.
Ooh, this is also potentially BS approved because I gave it a B+.
By the way, people, can you tell that I was sick?
I guess plowed
through some movies.
So people don't think that you have abandoned your family and do nothing but sit and watch movies all day long now.
Zootopia is great. The world that it creates is just so darn good. Like, I'm just like, yep, I want more adventures with these two. Get them in a cop car and let's go to work. Zootopia is great. It's a 9 out of 10.
Nice.
I loved it. Yeah, one of my favorite animated films of the year by far.
The scene at the DMV kills me, and it's on Netflix now. And the other night I was working on something and I put it on just to have on in the background and sort of half pay attention to it. And I watched that scene again and it cracked me up all over again. That scene is great.
It is a really good scene.
And the nudist colony with the nude animal.
Yes. it's a really original film. It is.
That's good stuff. Zootopia. Well, good. Well, there's some retroactive BS approved movies for y'all.
What about you? You had people that had never seen Airplane see Airplane.
That is exactly what happened. When you were sick, you and I had been going to watch a movie, but you were sick, and I didn't want your cooties. Mm-hmm. So I made alternate plans.
Yeah, I read about them on Twitter, like everybody else.
My friends Cole and Cammie, and they're both 25, and they had never seen Airplane. Cole had not heard of Airplane. He's familiar with Naked Gun. He'd seen that, so he kind of knew the idea. And as it turned out, certain lines from Airplane were familiar. He'd heard them quoted or whatever. Cammie was mostly in the kitchen making cookies. She was only listening to the movie. Her observation, by the way, was that if you're only listening to the movie, it is an exceptionally strange movie.
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And she also, this is actually insightful, she said the style of humor is like it's like autistic people who take everything you say literally.
Hmm.
Cole thought it was very funny, which I was glad of. You and I watched it a few years ago, and we noted that it has very few dated references.
Yeah.
It is very – one or two – a couple of things. There's that second cup of coffee, which is a reference to a commercial at the time.
Right. There's the Saturday Night Live – or Saturday Night Fever.
Right. Although that – I mean, that's dated, but it's not like you wouldn't know what that is. I mean, Saturday Night Fever was a big enough thing that you would recognize it now.
Just like Kareem, right? You would recognize Kareem.
You get that Kareem is a basketball player, yeah. Yeah, it's really not dated at all. The you ever see a grown man naked jokes? You like movies about gladiators? You ever been to a Turkish prison? You ever just hang around the gymnasium? That stuff did not go over.
Cole didn't think it was funny.
Cammie didn't think it was funny, and I it's interesting how our attitudes about that kind of – those kinds of jokes have changed maybe.
Yes. Yes. But like it's also – it's funny because it's just ingrained in me that it's funny because that movie is funny.
Right. Like, you don't think about what's really going on there.
Right. His delivery and everything is just it's always been funny. I can't stop thinking that's funny.
And because it's so inappropriate.
It's so inappropriate.
We get that. But yeah, it's those are jokes about the fact that this airline pilot wants to molest this boy. It does help that the stewardess and the co-pilot and the navigator are all in the cockpit too. I think even in 1980, it wouldn't have played well if he was alone in the cockpit with the boy.
Yeah, the boy is safe, everybody.
Right, right. But that was just interesting that was the – none of the jokes like with the flamey Johnny and Leon's getting larger. None of that seemed offensive particularly to them. But yeah, those – the child molestation jokes, that was – for these particular millennials, that was where the line was drawn. But it was good to see Airplane again. We needed a laugh. I'd been thinking of it because all week I'd been thinking, looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue.
I love that movie.
Oh, and then I also saw a couple movies that opened in the theater that they didn't screen for us. Went out and watched them. Paid money. Paid good money to watch these movies.
How dare they?
Yeah. Well, actually, I paid good money for one movie and then stayed for the second one. That's just between you and me, Internet.
Oh,
don't tell anyone. I saw Shut In. Got Naomi Watts. It's in New England. This is a thriller, and it's a bad thriller. Oh. She's taking care of her quadriplegic son.
Aww.
He was in an accident, and she's also a psychologist. She runs her practice out of the house next door to her own house, out in the rural Maine.
All right,
you do that, I guess. And then one night, this 9-year-old deaf boy, a foster kid who had been to see her at her office, shows up middle of the night at the house, and then disappears, vanishes. Like, while she's on the phone with the police or whatever, he disappears. And so now she got this on her conscience. Like, what happened to the kid?
Right.
And she's having to take care of her son. And she's worried she's cracking up. And Oliver Platt is her psychiatrist. And he only talks to her on Skype. So that at some point he can see something that she doesn't see. And he can be part of the story. Otherwise, he would just call her on the phone.
Yeah.
But the movie needs him to see something.
Nice.
Super generic, tedious thriller movie. You know how in these kind of movies, after the reveal, there's like 10 to 15 minutes of climax. And once we find everything out that we're going to find out, then there's all it lasts 30 minutes in this movie.
Oh.
So there's what we've learned everything, and then there's still a half hour of dragging it out. And no good. No good. Shut It. No good. I gave it a D.
Yeesh.
But then also Almost Christmas.
It's not that close to Christmas.
Well, it's close enough to release a movie called Almost Christmas, I guess. And this is a perfectly good ensemble comedy family thing with Danny Glover as the patriarch. His wife died not long ago, and it's his kids coming home for Christmas. You got J.B. Smoove as a son-in-law.
Ooh,
Gabrielle
I like
Union.
J.B.
Yeah, Gabrielle Union is one of the daughters. Who's the other daughter? Kimberly Elise. Omar Epps is in there. Monique plays the aunt. Monique cracks me up. She cracks my shiz up. And she always has.
All right, I'll take J.B. Smoove. You take Monique.
All right. Are we drafting them? Are we like putting together a team?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I'll take Monique.
All right, fine. I'll take J.B. Smoove.
She whoop his ass.
Yeah, he'd probably be the first to say it, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good, you know, funny-ish. Pleasant enough family ensemble Christmas dysfunction, ultimately warm-hearted. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Not the kind of thing I would pay money to see in the theater, even though I did. Well, actually, I paid for Shut-In.
Okay.
But like when it comes on cable, on TV, like next Christmas, totally watch it with the family. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Maybe I will.
And that brings us to the end of our show. To recap for you then, what we watched Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Meh.
Didn't care for it.
Not really.
Good news, though. They're only making 4 more.
Just 4 more.
And at least one of them stars Johnny Depp. That was exactly the reaction. Yeah, that's exactly the sound the internet made.
You guys, like, the look on him, though, is not something that you want to see for a couple hours.
Oh, man. Bleed for this also didn't care for.
It's all right.
Eagle Huntress is delightful.
Yep.
Any of your kids that can read some subtitles. And it's not like there's a ton of dialogue either. It's not a very talkative movie. But, it's very just delightful and wonderful and inspiring. And The Edge of 17, also pretty good. Don't take the kids. It's kind of dirty. a good teen angst comedy stuff.
I shall see it. Perhaps they'll send me a screener.
And maybe that someday, too, will be BS approved. Someday. And that's it. So until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.